It's Thursday, March 15th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We are thrilled to have in the studio with us Joel Rosenberg, friend of the program for many, many years. How are you doing, Joel?
I'm doing well. Good to see you, Glenn.
Good to see you. Now, Joel, you are
speaking of truthful. We're going right to a novelist.
Yes. Yeah.
So we need
truth. But you know what? Explain who you used to be before you were a novelist.
Well, I'm a failed political consultant. Everyone I worked for lost in Washington. Right. Helped Steve Forbes lose two presidential campaigns. Right. Was on Bibi Netanyahu's comeback campaign in 2000. It took him 9 more years to come back. Right. But anyway.
So you've been around on the losing team.
That's true.
So to
that's
give true. You some credibility, yeah,
exactly.
You have done that. Okay.
I tried.
But you're a guy who has passionately cared about the issues, and you've been around, the people in the know, seen the things, but from being around some of those
that's
people.
That's true. I learned a lot from them. And they may not have benefited from me, but I benefited from them a lot.
Correct. And so you've been studying mainly the Middle East, people would say, you know, he's mainly a guy who writes about the Middle East and is really studied that. I think I know you better. That you would include Russia in all of your studies of the Middle East because of the Gog and Magog connection, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, certainly there's a prophetic angle to Russia and something I've been fascinated with. Russia has had a hand in meddling and causing destabilization in the Middle East for the last century. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be interested in the Middle East, I live in Jerusalem. I'm a U.S. Israeli citizen. Mm-hmm. By the way, that means I get to vote twice. It's like living in Chicago, so that's nice. But Russia is going to be a player anywhere, but particularly in the Middle East. But also my family, Glenn, on my father's side is Jewish, Gentile on my mom's side. I'm an evangelical. But my dad's side were Orthodox Jews that escaped out of Russia under Tsar Nicholas II. Mm. So part in our heritage, our history, our DNA, we have always had a deep concern about evil rising in Russia and what it can do when the world doesn't see it coming.
So your book, it's called The Kremlin Conspiracy. And I have to tell you, I know you started, how long ago did you start writing this? A year and a half, two?
I started writing it 2 years ago, researching a little bit before,
Okay, so 2 years ago you started writing it. It is as if you wrote it literally this week. I mean,
yeah,
it's amazing.
We talk about my novels from the time you and I first met on CNN, then Fox, now here. You've been saying, well, these are like ripped from tomorrow's headlines and like today's headlines now. Yeah.
Yeah. This one is remarkable. Quickly explain the premise of the novel. And then I want to kind of get into the nuts and bolts of what's really happening and how it plays out in the book.
So in the Kremlin Conspiracy, it's the first political series, story of a new series. Alexander Luganov is the czar, the dictator rising in Russia. He's not Putin, but let's call him Putin-esque.
Well, let's say it's one of those movies where they make it an extra bold type that says, this is fictional characters, right. But you look at it and you're like, huh? Yeah, okay, yes, probably, but there's a lot of Putin.
There's a lot of Putin.
Yeah.
That's true. So, and I'll explain why in a moment, but all right, so you got Luganov, he's rising in Russia. We see him from two different angles. His son-in-law, Oleg Kraskin, actually, he marries into the family early in the book, and now he's not only a family member in this godfather-like family, but he is hired as a senior aide to Luganov. So we have inside access, in a sense, into the Kremlin inner circle through the eyes of this young lawyer who's a bit young, naive. He's sharp, but he doesn't understand what he's getting himself into. Mm-hmm. We're toggling back and forth through the Kremlin conspiracy with an American. Marcus Riker, who after 9/11 joins the Marines, gets sent to Afghanistan, ends up joining the United States Secret Service. And through a series of tragedies I won't talk about, I don't want to give too much away, he finds himself in Moscow, and Oleg and Marcus's lives converge at the most dangerous moment in U.S.-Russian relations. Big picture, what's happening with Luganov is he's got a new president in Washington, not well-versed in foreign and national security policy. The president's eyes are on North Korea and Iran, understandably so. Mm-hmm. But Luganov decides to take a gamble. While the world is focused on Asia and the Middle East, he decides to go grab one, two, or all three of the Baltic states, the NATO allies right on the border of Russia, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. He figures with 100,000 troops, a lightning-fast strike, he could grab one, two, or maybe all three in 96 hours. Now, you say, that's insane. Why would a Russian leader, even in fiction, go grab a NATO ally that's covered and protected by Article 5, the Mutual Defense Pact, which says if one country's attacked in NATO, everybody comes to its defense?
I know the answer. I think I know the answer.
Okay.
Even before I read the book, I can tell you the answer. Nobody wants nuclear war with Russia.
Right, right. And so Luganov's gamble is, nobody's going to stop me. If I actually grab it and hold even one of them, is the United States of America, is NATO going to actually go to even conventional war with me, and are they going to risk nuclear war with Russia over a country most Americans cannot find on a map? And his theory is no, and he thinks if the answer really is no, if NATO does not defend NATO, that's the end of NATO. In 96 hours, I can collapse the entire Western alliance because they won't do it. That's the theory of the novel.
So
Kremlin conspiracy.
So now let me tell you reality. So Putin, who has nothing to do with this book, has been trying to collapse.
I haven't been poisoned yet. That's a starter.
But I know.
We're just getting started.
Has said that he is wanting to collapse the NATO alliance and wants to collapse the Western world, and has just last week poisoned with a nerve gas that is clearly from Russia. It's only made in Russia. It's only kept in Russia. 21 people who are going to be vegetables for the rest of their life if they live. There is no cure from this nerve agent. It is a nasty, nasty nerve agent. He's called on the carpet. Theresa May says, well, you better answer or there's going to be, you know, something that's going to happen. She pulls out, Putin mocks her. The foreign ministry mocks it. The London embassy, the Russian embassy, issues joke photos in response. Does not take it seriously at all. It's almost as if Putin is giving us one real push to see, will they actually do anything? And the answer is no. We won't.
Well, they're not going to the World Cup, so that's something.
I mean,
the royal family isn't.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But they didn't say that.
Look, right. The team might go, but the
team might go.
The team might go, but the royal family will not go.
Right. The way NATO needs to handle this is finally getting serious with sanctions. You have to target specific individuals in the Kremlin, and you have to go after the money. This is not something you would go to war over, but
yes,
it's definitely something you've got to hit them where they count. And, you know, one of the things I do in this book, one of the things that fiction can do is take people outside of the day-to-day tactical headlines and sort of separate out whatever you feel about a specific leader at a specific moment. So by making this fiction, by not calling him Putin, by creating him Putin-esque with a lot of details, but then getting to play with it a bit, extrapolate.
Yes, yes.
It allows you to cause people to lose themselves in reality for a moment and go into this fictional world. And in this world, Luganov is a czar. Now, my family has literally physically escaped from the czar, Nicholas II. But what are the czars? Putin is not a communist.
Mm-hmm.
He's not an ideologue in the communist pure sense.
Mm-hmm.
We may want to talk about where he's coming from ideologically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But part of it is he's a monarchist. He believes that Russia has been humiliated by the collapse of the Soviet Union and that they need to rebuild the glory of Mother Russia. This is deep in his psyche. So Luganov is this person. He's a rising czar, which means he wants to expand the borders. Doesn't mean he's going to grab and control every country, but he wants to knuckle them under his thumb. He's also a godfather. He is a mafia boss, but he's not Sonny Corleone. He's not a rash, hot-headed, impulsive thug. He is Michael Corleone. He's a cold, calculated killer.
So we're going to take from the fiction and see what we're supposed to learn on what we can do to stop the actual Michael Corleone, who is currently in the Kremlin, when we come back.
The book is The Kremlin Conspiracy. Joel C. Rosenberg is with us, and we have more on a very timely book coming up in just a minute.
Glenn Beck.
So we're with Joel Rosenberg. He is the author of a new novel called The Kremlin Conspiracy. And if you want to be able to, as he just said a few minutes ago, kind of see the world, but not have to worry about the world. It's a novel, but it really is dealing exactly with much of what we're dealing with right now with Russia, and you can try to understand the figures and how everybody is being played, and what a great chess player Putin is. He's many moves ahead, I think, of all of us. Is there anybody, Joel, out there that you think is like that really gets Putin, besides I think probably Bibi Netanyahu?
No. I mean, not in the position of a president or a prime minister. There's a lot of, you know, experts to get him, but no, there's no. And no, we've got a lot of Churchills who are out of office, or they're backbenchers who are seeing him. I mean, the guy who gets him best, Garry Kasparov, Bill Browder, guys who've been directly threatened by him, yes, but have taken him on face to face. But they are working on a campaign that I think they are the Churchills of our time.
Yeah,
actually, those two men, and I think their tribe is beginning to increase. In other words, they are, you know, that what I'm doing is taking a different route. They are going straight policy speeches because they're experts on these things, and they know Putin face to face. But one of the things that has to happen is sometimes you have to drive things out of Washington, out of Brussels, out of the political sphere, and into the popular culture, so that it helps people understand evil that's rising. That we've almost as long as I've known you, we've talked about the central theme to all of my novels, even though they all have different characters, different flavors. But the theme is this: to misunderstand the nature and threat of evil is to risk getting blindsided by it. We were blindsided at 9/11. We were blindsided at Pearl Harbor. We were blindsided by the rise of Hitler and the Second World War and the Holocaust. We shouldn't have been. We all look back and go, there's a lot of data, but we weren't paying attention to it because we didn't understand the nature and threat of evil. And a lot of Western society poo-poos and discounts the concept that evil even exists. So it's hard to see it if you don't even believe it's there.
There's also a something in human nature that makes us want to say, no, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. We can't imagine it.
Right.
And in this particular case, we don't know what to do because none of us want nuclear war. We don't want a war with Russia.
Well, this is an example where, you know, okay, so the political thriller, The Kremlin Conspiracy, lays out one of the worst case scenarios. Literally in 96 hours, a Russian leader could collapse the NATO alliance. I think that's when I started working on it 2 years ago, I thought, all right, well, that's a little out there, but it's a good novel.
No,
but it could happen next week.
Yeah.
But here's the one way we could stop it. President Trump and NATO could significantly scale up the deterrent forces in the Baltics to create a speed bump high enough that whatever temptation is there is mitigated, and Putin backs off, looks for another victim.
And he will say, if we do that, he will say, look at the aggression of the West.
So what? I mean, it's better than them being invaded.
Does anybody have the courage to do that? And I mean, when I say that, I mean the American people. I mean, I want to go through some stats that you've looked at when you were writing this book about how America views Putin, views Russia, and I'm not sure we're all on the same page about him. We'll get to that here in just a second. The name of the book is The Kremlin Conspiracy by Joel Rosenberg. I don't know how many books have you written?
This is the 13th political thriller.
And they are all riveting. And as he said earlier, always like ripped from tomorrow's headlines. This one literally could be, I mean, it's like he wrote it last night. It really is. The Kremlin Conspiracy, available in bookstores now. Back in just a second.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So Joel Rosenberg is with us. He's written a book called The Kremlin Conspiracy. And Joel, I think the Kremlin has done a brilliant job of making Russia and Putin in America all about Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so the Clinton people, when you're talking about, you know, was there something funny going on with Gazprom? Yeah, there was. I'm sorry, but the Uranium One, that's a problem.
That's a problem.
I don't know if she was involved, but there's a mountain of evidence that was held back that even Congress couldn't see, that shows that they were in bribing and doing all kinds of stuff for people all around Washington on both sides. Here with the election, people are making it all about Donald Trump. I haven't seen the evidence that there's collusion. There are weird things, but he's putting people in place that are not. Pompeo is not a fan of Russia.
No, that's the thing. If President Trump were criminally colluding with Putin, you would not put Jim Mattis at the defense.
Why not?
The guy with the supreme allied commander of NATO. Why? Like, this is a guy who gets Russia, right. Is serious about the NATO alliance. Mike Pompeo at CIA, I've known him for years. He's a fan of my books. Not the why I'm a fan of him, but he's got good sense. Mike Pence at obviously the VP, Nikki Haley. These are not pushovers on Putin. So, moreover, to President Trump's credit, he is driving up U.S. defense spending when defense was hollowed out under Obama. He is pushing NATO to spend much more money for themselves on their own defense, and they're starting to do it. He's arming Ukraine with lethal weapons. President Obama never did it.
Mm-hmm.
His U.S. Special Forces took out a team of Russian mercenaries trying to give us a bloody nose in Syria and kicked their tails.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. Listen, so none of these are soft on Putin policies. But I have to say, my concern is that President Trump is radio silent on President Putin. No matter what Putin does that's evil, bad, nefarious, aggressive, President Trump doesn't seem to have the desire, the willingness to call him out on it. And President Trump isn't radio silent on anybody that he doesn't like. I'm guessing you've taken a few, just, you know, spitballing here. Yeah. I live in Jerusalem now, so I'm not totally up to speed. But,
right.
You know,
right.
The president's tougher on Jeff Sessions than he is on the worst dictator on the planet.
Yeah.
That
At
doesn't mean
verbally.
He's criminally corrupt, but it does mean that's weird.
Yeah.
And Vladimir Lenin.
But here's the problem. If we look at the public, I'm not sure because I think in many ways, Putin and then just the political machine has made this about Hillary Clinton didn't do anything wrong. Donald Trump didn't do anything wrong. And so we're not actually talking about who did do something wrong. And that's Vladimir Putin in Russia.
Right. Two thoughts, though, on that. One, this is the responsibility of the president of the United States to define the terms of the debate. And this is why radio silence is not just bad. It's actually harmful because you can define... Look, contrast what President Trump is doing with Russia, which is good policy, but no defining of the debate. Compare it with his North Korea policy. He defines Kim Jong-un as Rocket Man. He sends mm-hmm. B-2 bombers yes. over the peninsula.
Right.
He sends Pence to go to the DMZ. He sends Mattis. He sends the aircraft carrier task force.
Yeah.
And we don't know where it will go, but it has gotten North Korea's attention because it's this strategic pressure, this mm-hmm. maximum pressure. We are not getting maximum pressure on Russia, and we need to. So that's one point. The president needs to do it. The second point is to keep in mind what Vladimir Lenin used to say. He would say, probe with bayonets. If you find mush, push. If you find steel, stop. Under Obama, Vladimir Putin found mush, and he kept pushing, and nobody stopped him. What we need President Trump to do is to show steel. He is showing it in policy, although there's a few other things we could talk about that I think he should be doing. But he is not defining the terms of the debate, even at the moment this week where NATO is starting to say, and they're not sure what to do, but they, you know, we go back to this point about Russian nerve gas, military-grade nerve agents killing, poisoning people in Great Britain. This is we've never seen this happen since World War II. So this is a time when the President of the United States stands with your British allies, your NATO allies, and speaks out and begins to define the terms. Now, one last thought on that. This is a very good development of the idea of Mike Pompeo moving over to state.
I think it was a great move.
It is. One, because Tillerson is an honorable man, didn't understand the job, and didn't really know the president. So you never believed that he was really speaking for the president. Moreover, he had a personal friendship with Vladimir Putin. He got the highest civilian honor that you could possibly get from Vladimir Putin. That did not give me a sense that this guy had steel when it came to Putin.
Right.
Like, would you ever take a...
No.
You know, neither would I.
No.
Now, maybe if I was running ExxonMobil, but I'm not. Pompeo gets Russia and Iran and North Korea, but also, there's the key. Mike Pompeo, for all his skill sets, he did not have the legal ability at CIA to shape policy. CIA directors are not allowed to say, and therefore you should, Mr. President. Can't do it. It's only analysis and data, which is, that's the right thing. At state, he can craft a robust, comprehensive Russia policy, help the president, if the president is willing to be helped in that direction. But it's time.
Let me go through some of the stats. With the Russian invasion of Georgia, Ukraine in recent years, Russian forces fighting in Syria to protect the regime of Assad, Russia continuing to sell arms and nuclear technology to Iran, Russia hacking the U.S. computer networks and attempts to interfere in American elections. Would you agree or disagree with this sentence? I have come to believe that Vladimir Putin and the government of Russia pose a clear and present danger to national security in the United States, NATO allies, Europe, and our Middle East allies, such as Israel. 72% believe that's true. 60% say they worry about Putin now planning another military attack, perhaps an invasion of a small NATO country or Middle Eastern country, because he thinks the international community isn't serious about stopping him. And 51%, 51.9, are not convinced the president understands Russia or Putin and must do more. What's that tell you?
Well, we commissioned this poll for the release of the Kremlin conspiracy last week, and we did that from a highly respected pollster, John McLaughlin. I've known him for 25 years. John has also been one of the president's pollsters. And I said, okay, this is going to be important because if the president's going to – I want to know what Americans really think. I want it to be fair. I want it to be scientifically accurate. But it also has to be done by somebody who the president wouldn't listen to. Like, these are real numbers. They're not, mm-hmm. you know, some
CNN.
Leftist – you know, right, exactly. So now I briefed the White House staff on these numbers and congressional leaders on these numbers, and it's important for these numbers to get out. Because as we head into the 2018 elections, if 3 out of 4 Americans think that Putin is a clear and present danger, but 52% don't think the president fully understands that threat or is doing all that he can, that's a real problem. Because what do Americans agree on 3 out of 4 Americans on anything these days?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that that means that it's their front and center issue, but I think instinctually they get this issue, but they want to see leadership. And it's actually kind of crazy to hear Democrats being able to attack a Republican president for being soft.
It's crazy.
On Vladimir Putin. But at this point, at least in terms of rhetoric, that charge holds.
So we're talking to Joel Rosenberg, the Kremlin conspiracy. What should...
Novel. That, just to be clear, I'm not actually involved in a Kremlin conspiracy.
Right.
For the record, right. I would like... And in fact, when I was in Vice President Pence's office a few months ago, and he said, what's your next novel about? I said, well, I don't really want to mention it in the West Wing. He said, why? What are you talking about? I said, well, it has nothing to do with what's going on here. And Pence pressed me, what's the title? I said, sir, it's the Kremlin conspiracy. I've known Mike Pence for a long time. I got to say, I've never seen him laugh quite as hard as, as he did when he heard the name of the novel. Anyway.
So the Kremlin Conspiracy, the novel, can you give us what you think we should be doing at this time with Theresa May? What should we be doing? How can we show steel without, you know, pushing us closer to the edge of a war with Russia?
Yeah. If I were advising the President of the United States, I would advise him to immediately call her, invite her to Washington. I would do a joint statement together. I might not even just ask her. I would ask the head of NATO to come, or I'd get on a plane. I'd go to London or Brussels. I would start moving. I would not even announce it. I would just start moving U.S. forces, tanks into the Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. The president is going to have a summit on April 3rd with the three presidents of the Baltic states. They are terrified. The Lithuanian ambassador actually heard about the book and invited me to breakfast. I didn't know him, to talk about these things, to get a copy and talk about what can be done. You have to, and then I would start imposing the very sanctions that Congress overwhelmingly passed last year and President Trump has not yet imposed.
That is one
only
thing
two senators voted against it. Over 400 congressmen voted for it. He's got the legal authority. It's time. Move. This, you've got all the setup. You've given Putin all the space. If he wanted to change, he would have changed by now. Start to hit Putin where they care about, which is targeted sanctions on individuals. Use the Magnitsky Act, the act that specifically goes after people that are engaged in criminal activity. You don't have to – there's a way to ramp this thing up. You don't want to overreach – but you've got to start protecting our allies and hitting specific Putin cronies.
Do you believe that, I mean, Putin's election is on Sunday.
Yes, I'm not holding my breath. I don't think it'll be a Pennsylvania 18.
I don't think so.
I'm just spitballing here.
Right. But, you know, some of this, I think, is happening because of his election on Sunday. Do you agree with that or not?
I don't. And the reason I don't is because when you're a dictator, he'd love to win with 95. The danger is if he thinks he wins with 60, that would tell you that 40% of the country is voting for somebody. They don't care who it is, just not him. Mm-hmm. I think that's a risk to him. But since you're not really worried as Vladimir Putin over if you're going to win or not, what are you doing? I think we would be misreading him, saber-rattling, as just being political. I think he means it. I think he is a thug who's looking for another country to take.
So 30 to 45 seconds. Do you see war as a real possibility with Russia?
If we show weakness. I mean, if we can't show steel with a country that's actually a weak country. They have nuclear weapons, but this guy is a bully, and we're the world's superpower. We've got NATO. We just need to show steel. This is the darkest hour with Winston Churchill. Under Neville Chamberlain, not good. With Winston Churchill and FDR kicking in, there's a lot we can do to stop evil in this world, but the West gets blindsided when we don't pay attention and we don't stand up for ourselves.
Thanks, Joel. Appreciate it.